Hello, listeners. I would like to welcome to the Radio Freethinker virtual studio, Iglika Ivanova. Iglika Ivanova is a public interest researcher at the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. She has a master's degree in economics, which she uses to investigate issues and trends in healthcare, education, and social programs. And she examines the impact public services have on the quality of life. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Dallin.
A significant number of our listeners were university or college students. We have been riveted to the news coming out of Quebec with protests over the increase in tuition fee. Now, it's beyond the expertise of my guest here about the political firestorm that has arisen out of these grievances, but I thought it would be an excellent opportunity to delve into tuition fees and student debt. At the heart of the issues in Quebec are the increases in tuition fees. It is claimed that they are necessary to pay for Quebec's post-secondary system. To assess that claim, I thought first I would ask a simple question. Where exactly does a university or college get its money from?
Well, since the early 20th century, when we've seen an increase in the number of Canadian universities and post-secondary education in general, Canadian universities have gotten their money through a mix of government funding and student tuition fees. However, over that time period, the mix has changed. You know, how much comes from funding from government and how much comes from student tuition. And in particular, since the 1990s, we have seen an increased withdrawal of government support and increased reliance on more and more of the university funding coming through tuition. So if you want some numbers, I can throw some numbers at you. For example, 30 years ago in 1979, about 84% of university funding came from government support, so the vast majority. In 2009, only 58% of university funding comes from government. So there's been a huge decline there, and tuitions increased in prominence threefold. So it used to be around 12% of all government, of all university funding, and now about 35% the university funding comes from tuition fees. So huge change there.
Excellent. And actually, we like numbers on this show because, again, a lot of people will sit there and they will say, well, I think things are getting worse, but the empirical evidence is an important part of that. And we appreciate you throwing those numbers in there. So there's been a great decline in the amount of money that the actual government is spending. It's still providing the majority of funding to universities. Once the universities get this money, where exactly do they spend it?
Well, a big chunk of what universities spend their money on is educating students and providing student support services. So a lot of that goes into salaries for university teachers and for the support staff. But universities see themselves, and they are multi-purpose organizations. So they also engage in research and community service, as well as in teaching. And then they also teach graduate students as well as undergraduates. So it would be inaccurate to attribute all of the university expenses to the undergraduate teaching that we often talk about. At present, universities aren't required and don't publicly report on what percentage of their budget goes to which one of these three main areas, teaching, research, and community service. But University of Western Ontario economists who've done some research on that estimated about half of operating funding for universities goes towards teaching undergraduate. So that's roughly, if you look at the budget, about half goes towards teaching undergraduate.
And of course, I mean, things like research should be in some ways more the responsibility of government itself than the students who are going there. Now, I've heard this in the United States, and I don't know if it's relevant or true in Canada, that a number of schools now are spending far much more money on fundraising campaigns than they do on things like research or the faculty.
I'm not sure what the numbers are, but definitely we've seen an increased amount of fundraising activity in Canada. And that's because of the withdrawal of government support that I talked about. I mean, historically, in the United States, there have been a lot more private universities that have exclusively relied on students' tuition and fundraising to pay their bills. But in Canada, since the big expansion of post-secondary education happened in the early 20th century, we've sort of decided that education is in the public domain and universities have been public, so government paid for most of the bills. But over the last 20 years, as we've seen the decline in government funding, there's been more and more attention paid to fundraising. I was reading an article by UBC Deputy Chancellor Doug Oram, who says that at the minimum now, universities' presidents can expect to spend a quarter of their time on fundraising. So that's a huge change. They used to spend virtually no time on fundraising, now they spend a quarter of their time. And we know they're very highly paid. So even if you just count the salary of the university president, that's a big chunk right there.
Wow. Now, related to that is the connection between universities and private businesses or corporations as far as them providing large grants and donations, but a lot of them with strings attached. Is there much stronger ties between universities and private corporations, and what's the cost of that connection?
Well, I think there's some concern that's being expressed into how research may be influenced in terms of either topics of research interest or, you know, at the extreme, universities' freedom of expression, how that may be influenced by companies and their donations. I imagine the universities try their best to maintain independence, but the more they rely on private fundraising, the more I think people are right to ask these questions and to raise concern about conflict of interest. I don't think you can get away with from that.
Do universities make more money from these donations now than tuition fees themselves, or is that still distant?
Oh, it's distant for Canadian universities. The stats that I was looking at show that a very small amount of total funding comes from donations, about 10 times less than comes from tuition fees. And there's a bit more money universities get from investments, because some of them have endowment funds, because they don't necessarily spend all the donations, right? A lot of universities started to accumulate endowment funds and that they invest and then spend the sort of an interest off of those investments. So bigger universities like University of Toronto and UBC have large endowment funds, and the interest they get every year actually surpasses the amount of money they can collect yearly in donations from people like alumni, you know, other small donations.
Good news then on that front. But let's go back to tuition fees. I was reading an article by Andrew Coyne in which he stated that in Quebec, students only pay about 17% of the cost of running universities, and that the Canadian average is about 40%. Is this true? And does this not lead to some credence that students are sort of pampered?
Well, I'm not sure where this article got the numbers, but they're a little more exaggerated than the numbers I have seen. While it is true that Quebec tuition fees are lower than the national average, the gap isn't quite as big as this suggests. If your listeners are interested in numbers, the Canadian Association of University Teachers compiles great statistics on university finances annually and publishes it for free on their website. So according to their data, they show that about 21% of university funding in Quebec comes from tuition, so not 17, 21, and about 35% is the national average. So the gap isn't quite as big, but it is large. Now, how do other provinces compare? A lot of other provinces are also in the 20s, like less than 30% of funding comes from tuition, including Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and PEI. And then the only places where tuition fees are particularly high are Ontario and BC, basically. So we have some of the highest reliance on tuition fees here in BC as a share of university funding. We are over 40%. And Quebec is less. But does that mean the students are pampered? I don't know. It really depends on your point of view. For example, BC has the lowest corporate tax rate. Does it mean that our corporations are pampered? You know, these kind of questions come up.
Quite an interesting comparison, because someone from my particular view on the world would actually say, yes, they are. So maybe you're right. We have to be careful when we use standards to apply them consistently.
But basically, Canadian provinces do get independence on how they set tuition fees and government support for university. And university education falls within provincial jurisdiction. And in Canada, our government is such that provinces get quite a bit of independence to decide how they want to set those rates of support. So what people voted for and what government decided to go for.
You know, we talked about the independence of universities. And again, you said that roughly you do not believe that there's a significant influence on our universities because of this economic need universities have. They are under a lot of stress to maintain their budgets to supply what they are supplying. And sometimes it seems they're almost desperate to get anyone to give them money. And in doing so, there is this conflict of interest issue. But you said you don't think that's as big of an issue in Canada as it is in some place like the United States. Or what about Europe?
I'm not sure what the situation is in Europe. I think it's not as big of an issue in Canada as in the United States, but it is rising in prominence. And trying to remember, there's fairly recently some controversy in the media about a research chair funded by a corporation or in one of the universities, but I cannot remember which one. I believe it was in Ontario. And there was a big thing about whether it's compromising the integrity of the research. And I think that private funding and the problems it creates mostly relate to research rather than teaching. And most of the work I have done on university policy has related to teaching. So I'm not as much of an expert in what's happening on the research front. I think it's important. I think it needs more government support to avoid these potential conflict of interest. My sense is that universities are trying to avoid them, but they are becoming more of a concern as time goes on, not less of a concern. So we'll probably hear more about that in the future.
What role then should the government and public funding play in the post-secondary institution? I know there are a number of countries in the world that actually provide free post-secondary education. Is that something that would be workable here?
I don't see why not. I mean, we managed to provide free healthcare. We should be able to, provide free education if that's what we decide to do. I think that's a good direction to go into. In general, I would say public funding should play a much larger role in funding post-secondary education than it is playing now. And there's great arguments for funding research publicly to maintain independence, as we talked about potential conflict of interest. And also as an economic development strategy, because we all talk about innovation, about knowledge economy, and a lot of that does come from formal education. There's a lot of links with formal education. But not just research, I think government should play a bigger role in funding teaching as well. And there's two big reasons why. One is the traditional reason why we subsidize education to begin with. And that's that there are social benefits from having an educated population that go above and beyond what the individuals gain from getting a degree. So if we just left it to the market and individuals had to pay or, make an investment in themselves, what we would see is an underinvestment from societal point of view in education. We won't have enough people going to school and our economy will suffer. So because there are social benefits from education, we have good reason to fund it collectively as a society. And these benefits, for example, include things like innovation and knowledge creation, which I talked about, but also other things. Like, there's a lot of research that finds that better educated societies are also healthier societies. So that reduces healthcare costs. And independently of that people who get the post-secondary education are more active participants in their communities. They volunteer more, and that helps deal with some of the social problems we have. So all in all, there's a lot of positives to having an educated population. So we should, fund education. But also the other reason to fund education publicly is to ensure fair access, to make sure that people who face financial barriers in their youth are not prevented from obtaining an education.
We will return after a little break.
Science is the best tool ever devised for understanding.
To subscribe to the Radio Free Thinker podcast and take it on the go and download previous episodes, subscribe via iTunes or at radiofreethinker.com. Remember to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts to share with us, email at info@radiofreethinker.com.
That understanding empowers you.
Back. One of the people that I was talking to in preparation for this particular interview had asked me a very interesting question. He says, isn't it sort of a fundamental principle of, our classic capitalist society that as you produce more of something, the sort of per unit cost goes down? And right now we have more people, I believe, who are trying to get and are receiving a post-secondary education than we've ever had, even as a percentage of society. Shouldn't that mean actually that tuition fees should be going down? Is there something wrong with my analogy?
Well, there seems to be something wrong, because it's not just tuition fees, they're not going down, but the total cost of operating universities, they're not going down. I think it may have to do with the technological developments and, requirements of the current economy, that people have more education and it's becoming more and more complicated. So the cost of providing the education we needed, 50 years ago may have gone down, but now we need a different kind of education, and that's more money. I think we found that university operating costs have been increasing faster than inflation, faster than other items. And that's the fact. I don't know why, but that is something that we have to deal with.
So many students out there with degrees, does this actually sort of stimulate the economy or kind of suppress it? By that, I mean, when my father got a good job, all he sort of needed was a good attitude. When I was looking, you had to have a high school diploma. However, now it seems like that employers won't even look at an applicant if they don't have a bachelor's degree, even if it's something that's a really sort of mundane job. So this sort of increase in qualifications has sort of elevated the market in some degrees, but it's also made those people on the lower end much less in demand and able to be paid less. Overall, does this stimulate the economy with everyone getting the degree or not?
Well, I think that some people have expressed concern about what they call education inflation, or the fact that now more and more people are getting education, and does this devalue the value of the degrees, the standard supply and demand principles? If you have more graduates, like higher supply, would that reduce their wages? But economics research that's looked at the university education premium, so sort of the increased earnings of people with degrees, consistently finds that over the last 20 years in Canada, we've actually seen an increase of the university education premium. So it pays more now to get a university degree than it did 20 years ago. So that makes economists think that the increase in university degrees that we see, or the increase in education, is driven by demand from the labor market. So it's not just like exogenous supply, it's not just the decision of the students to get the education, but that the labor market actually needs those people to have degrees, and that's why it continues to reward them with higher salaries. But I think you're onto something, because we have seen a corresponding decline in the wages of people who don't have education beyond high school. And that is of a concern, especially if you think that access to education is not necessarily very equitable. And if people who come from lower income families don't get to go to school, and there's some evidence that they don't, then that's a problem, because then they are stuck in very low wage situations that creates problems with social mobility and increased income inequality in society.
So overall, it seems like if you do have a university degree, you will get a better job. And if you don't, that will have some negative effects. But doesn't actually one of the side effects of our current system of funding it actually run against that in a certain degree? By that, when students graduate with a degree, most of them have huge student loan debts. With pressure, of course, to make payments on these, many students, if not most students, are forced to take jobs that are well below their technical abilities. So again, doesn't this sort of suppress the economy by having a lot of these students out there, and as soon as they're graduating with these huge student loan debts?
I think that the student loan debts are a problem. And in fact, there's research from Statistics Canada that looks at the sort of the impact of graduating with a student loan 10 years later and what impact that has on your finances. So it finds that people who have taken out student loans do have problems with their finances long after graduation, and that the fact that we're seeing increasing level of student loans should make us worry. But the fact that we are seeing high level of student loans, that's not something that's not a natural consequence of people getting education. That's a public policy choice. We've decided to ask students to pay for their education upfront and finance it through debt. There's other ways to finance education. There's other ways to get people to be educated. They don't have to graduate with that much debt. So I think that is a public policy choice. And I think we will have to reconsider it sometime very soon, because we're starting to see higher and higher household debt. And student debt is part of it. And it is creating a problem for our society. I think we should reconsider not just tuition, but also student aid and how we pay, how we help students, and whether maybe we should have more grants versus loans.
Well, that actually was going to be my follow-up question. We did sort of mention already that one way to do this is just to have the government flip the bill for universities out of taxation, basic taxation. What are some of the other models that you're sort of alluding to that might also work?
Well, the other models would be to have more grants. And you see, there's an interesting comparison here, again, between Europe and the United States. Because what we see in most of Europe, especially in Northern Europe, is increased tendencies of governments to just take foot the bill through general taxation. In the United States, however, they don't like paying for things through general taxation, so they charge high fees. But there's some research I've seen, very interesting, that says that the average student loan is lower in the United States than in Canada because they have better grants for lower income people. And while we have very limited grants and provide most of our financial aid through loans that are repayable, the United States have a big system of federal grants for lower and middle income students. However, they still have huge problems with income inequality and huge problems with accessibility of universities. So their social mobility is lower than ours. So it raises the question of, if we're aiming to get to the level of education, attainment, accessibility, and social mobility of Europe, should we try to implement funding models from the United States that focus on targeting lower income students for grant support, or should we implement the model funding models from the countries we're trying to emulate, like Northern Europe, where they just pay for it through taxation?
Very interesting choice there. Is that a very significant issue in Canada with regards to inequality and discrimination? I mean, obviously, middle and well-off individuals can afford to go to university. Is it really, really difficult for low-income people to do it as much as it would have been 20, 30 years ago?
Well, I think it's an interesting question. The unfortunate part of it that I see as a researcher is there's very little data that is collected on this issue of who goes to university and who doesn't go. A lot of the research on it was done by the now defunct Canada Millennium Scholarship Foundation that was founded for a few years there in the early 2000s to look at the issues of post-secondary education, but then it mandate expired and was not renewed. So there's nobody really now that provides this kind of statistics. But it's interesting, and it will be interesting to your listeners, that a couple of years ago, I think in 2010, the UBC School of Medicine had a very publicized media campaign of trying to get more students from lower socioeconomic background to go into medical school, because they noticed that they had very good racial diversity in their program, and they had both men and women roughly equally represented. However, everyone came from upper income or wealthier families. There were virtually no students who came from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. So they were trying to figure out how to attract more. But they are sort of an exception rather than the rule of a program that actually looked at itself to assess its socioeconomic diversity and try to do something about it. We, by and large, don't know, you know, who goes, especially to those professional programs that are very expensive, like law, medicine, and business. But I wouldn't be surprised if we find very skewed socioeconomic distribution there of the students.
Well, thank you for your time and your input today. Is there any last words you'd like to impart to our audience?
In terms of last words, I guess one thing I'd like to say is that we need to have better educated society. We know that a lot of the jobs that will be created over the next decade or so will require post-secondary education. So we need to get people to get the education. It costs what it costs. It's expensive, and costs have been decreasing. So really, the only question isn't, do we get our youth educated? The question is, what's the fairest and most effective way to pay for it? Do we charge the students up front and get them to amass huge student loans, or do we pull more of our money through taxes and publicly fund universities?
Very, very good. Thank you very much. Listen again, folks, next week, where we will talk about poverty.